Becky Marie Byer here, welcoming you to Season 3. If you're new to the show, I hope you'll subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app, and let's get growing! Listeners, have you heard my most recent interview with J.M. Fortier? Did you know that he started an awesome new venture called Growers and Company, where they have a magazine that's printed that comes out twice a year that highlights the amazing farmers that he's taught personally? So you're going to learn from people who are practiced putting his practices into place on their farms. If you want to be a better farmer, you definitely want to subscribe to this magazine. That's going to be like a coffee table item on your shelf. And then the other thing, part of Growers and Company, is he's created tools that he uses on his farm that he's like studied. You know, he got to travel all around the world when he wrote his book, The Market Gardener. If you don't have that, you absolutely have to get a copy of it. But he got to go travel to all these farms, and then he would look at tools that they had in the hardware stores or using in these other farms, brought them back to his farm, you know, talked to a developer, came out with some really cool tools. Like, he talks about his broad fork. The handles are just wood, and that helps it make it light, but it's sturdy. It's just the exact kind of broad fork that I want. They've got other really cool weeders and different things. And then he's got farmware that he designed that will keep you dry and keep you out there. I know with one of my big barriers was my garden shoes. So he's got boots and just great things that are stylish, comfortable, but most of all, they're going to keep you warm and dry when you're out in your garden doing all that hard work. So Growers and Company, growers.co. Check it out. Get something for your favorite gardener. Definitely get a Small Scale Farmers Are Changing the World t-shirt for your favorite farmer marker vendor. Do you belong to a CSA? I'll bet you want to get them a Christmas present this year. It doesn't have to be on time. I know it might be late when you're hearing this, but make sure you support growers.co. Their stuff is super affordable. The Canadian exchange right now. I just bought something for someone, a present for Kathy from the Composters, because I go to her laughter yoga with her, and I think it said it was like $25, but it only took $20 out of my bank account, so I probably shouldn't be talking about the Canadian exchange, but I know his things are affordable. I researched broad forks and what they cost. It's a great deal. You will get so much use out of that tool. So support Growers and Co. Join the amazing Patty Armbruster and I Saturday mornings, 9 a.m. Montana Standard Time, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, for Grow Live on YouTube. Patty Armbruster is going to ask your questions. You can submit them ahead of time, and we'll be prepared with the answers. What do you want to know? We're starting out talking about selecting seeds, but she's going to answer everything from how to process local meats to, you know, what pests are good, or, you know, what plants are good to bring in beneficial insects into your garden. Just, we all know Patty knows so much about everything. I'll be asking the questions. She'll be answering them. We're going to be doing this on YouTube live Saturday mornings, 8 a.m. Pacific, 9 a.m. Montana Standard Time, 10 Central, 11 Eastern, Saturday mornings on YouTube, Grow Live with Patty and Jackie.
Me?
No, not at all, Jackie. You just go ahead and ask whatever you want to ask, and okay. I'm happy to. I suppose just out of interest, your podcast, it's for organic gardeners, is it?
It is. So last December, we did change the title to The Green Organic Garden instead of just The Organic Gardener. Okay. I call my listeners green future growers because, you know, there's a lot of podcasts out. There's tons of information out there that's going to tell you how to grow a better tomato, how to grow a head of lettuce. My listeners are interested, and me and my husband, in creating a, you know, an environment, an ecosystem, a you know, it's more, you know, we believe there's a lot of politics. My show, we do talk about politics because we do feel like caring for Mother Earth and protecting our planet, it is related to gardening, and it's all interconnected. And just and my listeners are interested in green jobs. They're interested in just so. And it was funny because the first interview I did when that came out was Jeff Lowenfels, who, I don't know if you've read his books, Teeming with Nutrients and all those. He's like, my thing for the year is, what would Greta do? And it was, I was like, oh, this is so perfect, because, and that's part of why I'm so excited to talk to you, because, you know, you definitely see the link between growing food and growing and protecting our planet. You're so passionate about Mother Earth and protecting our planet. And that's, you know, that's where it all comes from. So
yeah,
those are my listeners.
Okay, brilliant.
Does that help?
Of course. Yeah, that's wonderful. That's great. Thanks. I should have actually researched it, but I haven't had a moment today. So
well, you know what? I always say the best interview happens when just the right listeners in the audience. And it was me researching you yesterday that's going to make this such a better interview. Because I was like, I was telling my husband, I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, I read her book, but it was so long ago. Like, I got to go refresh my memory. And then I found your ARC site and I was like, oh my gosh, this is so what I want to do. Because I realized, like, one of the big things this summer, just like coincidentally during the pandemic, I had a lot of people come to my garden in our home. And we have 20 acres of forest land in northwest Montana, which is on the, we're right up against the Rocky Mountains, up on the Canadian border. But, you know, we just like have a very tiny part where we grow the food. And I realized that I need to, my husband has made kind of some paths, like a little network nature walk where I can walk and get exercise. And it was supposed to be where I could cross country ski, but it's a little too steep for that. But
okay,
I do walk though. And in the summer, I realized last summer, when people come to see the garden, I need to take them for a walk through the trails and see the property and then end back here at the garden. And I just, I'm like, I'm going to put little arc signs and really learn more about the native part and really connect our home, like connect the whole 20 acres and not just be like, here, come see my apple trees. Here, come see, like, I just like, it was like a game changer. So I feel like we're going to have such a better chat today because of that.
Oh, great. Fair play to you. That's wonderful.
Okay. And then I'm going to be quiet. I actually mute my mic and everything. I was just telling my last guest, I'm like, yeah, I literally mute my mic because my listeners tell me, don't interrupt your guest. So if I do have to ask you a question, like, it makes this physical barrier for me to actually, like, it's got to be really important. And that way they get to hear you talk. So my show is a complete success because of my amazing guests like you. And just thank you so much. I'm so honored to talk to you.
I'm delighted you asked me. I'm always happy to talk about this stuff. So thank you.
Okay. Well, here we go. Welcome to the Green Organic Garden. It is Tuesday, January 5th, 2021 is finally here. And I just have season three, the lineup of guests just gets better and better. I can't believe it. I have the most amazing Mary Reynolds from Ireland on the line today. If you don't know who she is, hopefully you're going to know more about her today. And then you're going to do some research and you're just going to love her. Her message is so important. I know you guys are going to love it. She's going to drop tons of golden seeds and she's going to make our lives better. She is making our planet better. She's making our lives better. She's going to make your life better today. So welcome to the show, Mary.
Thanks for having me, Jackie. You're great.
Well, I know about you because my mom turned me on to your movie about when you won the Chelsea Garden Show in, I don't know, years ago. But now you've kind of twisted and changed and you've pivoted and now you're teaching people how to really connect with Mother Earth and nature and stop tilling and doing all these great things that are regenerating our planet. And you've got this thing, ARC, that stands for acts of regenerative kindness. I love it's just like it's the most perfect thing. And just go ahead and tell listeners what all you've got going. And it's the cutest logo and it's the best page and I love everything.
Thanks, Jackie. Well, yeah, I guess it's been a bit of a twisty old journey for sure. I guess I started off as a garden designer, and then I went through various kind of hoops and changes and twists, and I wrote a book called The Garden Awakening about, I don't know, 5, 6 years ago, where, I kind of wrote myself out of a job and tried to figure out how to really design spaces in harmony with nature, and also by allowing the land to become what it wants to become rather than controlling it. But I've kind of twisted away from that, or even further on from it again, although I still use that in the half of the gardens that people still work with. But I was sitting at my window. I'll just give you a little background of
Awesome.
where the ark came from. So I was sitting at my window at my desk one day, looking down over my garden, and this was in the winter of not this winter. It's actually 2 years ago now, the winter of 2 years ago, and a fox ran past on the lawn beneath me. I work upstairs, and just after the fox, a couple of hares, both native creatures to Ireland where I live, and it's very unusual because it's usually the other way around. But then a few minutes later, I looked up and I noticed a hedgehog scuttling along underneath the hedge. Now, they're usually nocturnal and hibernating, so I thought, okay, there's something going on. So I left my desk and went outside, and I walked up my lane to see where they were running away from. And at the end of my lane, which is a country lane in Ireland, very quiet, there's a little, small little road, and on the other side of the road was this thicket of a field, which I loved, and it was about an acre, and it was impenetrable with thorny plants like hawthorns and blackthorns, and native, all self-willed land, completely impenetrable. And somebody had got planning permission to build a house at the top of the field, and they'd gone in with a digger, and they do what everybody does, they completely cleared it out to make a garden. And they hadn't had one thought for all the creatures that called it home. So I stood there in pretty much feeling pretty bad and absolute horror, because I realized I'd done this myself so many times, and that these wild creatures had nowhere left to go, less and less places to go. They couldn't go out into agricultural land because it was poisoned with chemicals, and their habitats were being reefed out to use up every last square inch for growing crops. They couldn't go into people's gardens because they were filled with non-native plants, which didn't support an ecosystem. And they were just trying to find refuge in all these tiny little wild places, which were becoming fewer and fewer and more islandized. And I just thought that the time for gardens is over. So I went back inside. I'm quite an extreme person anyway, so maybe that probably sounds quite extreme, but I went back inside and realized, like, I can do something here, because I do have, a certain amount of people listen to me every now and again anyway, occasionally when I have something to say. And so I started a global movement, which actually took off, and is now all around the world. And myself and my friend Claire and Ruth and Joe and Jen, we put together a website very, very quickly. And I wrote all the words for the website. And it was called We Are the Ark, Acts of Restorative Kindness to the Earth. And I'm asking people to give half of any land they have under their care back to nature so that she can take care of all her creatures. And we can give sanctuary and hope to, all our shared kin who we are hopelessly and helplessly dependent upon. If they don't survive, we don't survive. And the collapse in biodiversity is phenomenal. We've wiped out 83% of all wildlife on Earth, even though we only make up 0.01% of all life on Earth as humans. And insects have nosedived by 75% in the last 50 years, specifically since the green revolution, the chemical farming revolution took hold. So without insects, we would only have a few months to live because they pollinate 90% of plants, 90% of flowering plants, and 75% or higher of other plants. And without those plants, there's no food, there's no ecosystem. They're the foundation stone of all our life. And they clean our water, they give us food, they give us shelter, they give us clean air. And we are treating them as if they are simply things that are pretty or not pretty, depending on our feeling for them, and filling our gardens full of non-native still life plants, which we control within an inch of their lives. We forget that the earth has a very, very intelligent system of her own, which we need to give her room to heal now. And so that's it. That's the basic beginning of where I'm with the We Are the Ark movement.
And I think one of the things I saw yesterday that was really helpful for me was, were you saying that, like, if we all did this within 5 years, we could make a huge impact on climate change and healing Mother Earth? Like, it could have that big of an impact?
Yeah, well, I think are you referring to a TED Talk I did, perhaps?
I think I am.
Yeah, okay. I was pretty nervous doing that TED Talk. So I think I messed up. I think I said we could reverse climate change within 5 years, but actually that's not true. I was so nervous. I got that wrong. We could actually begin to reverse climate change. Yes. By rewilding our planet, by capturing carbon in nature's natural successive processes, rather than planting trees and thinking that will do the trick, that actually allowing nature to heal her own skin and to plant her own trees, as long as the land isn't damaged and isn't cut off from natural native woodlands and things, yes, that we can make a huge difference. But actually, I think in the TED Talk I was referring to farming and transforming farming back into a less destructive practice, one that actually incorporated trees, like agroforestry systems or permaculture, regenerative systems, which actually put back into the earth rather than constantly taking from it. The We Are the Ark project kind of asks people to grow their own chemical-free food in the no-dig system, in the half of their garden that they're keeping to work with, if they can, and the other half to basically rewild it. We call it arking as opposed to rewilding because it's missing so many different creatures from the ecosystem that we have to step in and become them and carry out the services that are missing. So certain things like we ask that people create as many different edges and ecotones in their spaces as possible, as much diversity as they can, which would naturally be kind of held in place by different keystone plants, different keystone animals like apex predators or ecosystem engineers, such as beavers, apex predators such as wolves. So obviously in small suburban spaces or 20 acre plots or whatever it is you have, you can't have your wolf or wolf pack or all those things. So we ask people to step in and carry out those different services, and it's very simple. Actually, I'm just finishing up writing We Are the Ark book about this, and
awesome.
It's a very simple book and how to make your ark into the most supportive and diverse sanctuary you can, and how you can do it without any money. And you can, it really changes everything because it expands your heart and your family to include all these tiny creatures and not so tiny creatures that come and share the land. And you just feel so blessed and grateful that your land and family have expanded to include all these other creatures, and you become more and more protective of them. Because what I ultimately ask is that people become guardians of their land, not gardeners. That we learn to find our place in this web of life again, which is one of guardian, you know, caretaker. We've lost our way, you know.
Oh my goodness, I love all of this. And like one of the struggles we've been having is we have this grizzly bear who keeps breaking into our chicken pen, and I just love that. I'm gonna become a guardian of that grizzly bear and figure out, because I get so frustrated, like all these people are moving in, like I want to see this bear. Like, we're gonna figure it out. Like, the chickens come in and sleep in my bathtub at night. You know, if that's what we have to do, like, I live here because I want to see that grizzly bear. Like, I'm just so frustrated. Like, I'm definitely going to become a guardian and, like, welcome more creature, like, figure it out, because I can't stand when people are like, oh, shoot it and shoot the wolves. And, like, my grandson and I were just talking about how lucky we are to live here and get to hear wolves and hear coyotes and get to, but yeah, we have like, oh my goodness, they've sold so many houses. Like, we are just getting inundated with people with the pandemic. Like, they are flooding here. And so, you know, so I think, like, I'm just so excited about this. And like I was telling you in the pre-chat, like, I'm so excited to make like little signs. And like, when people come to see our garden, I'm going to take them on like a tour that goes through the whole property and connect and like start more like teaching about the native plants that are growing, like the juniper bushes. I just love juniper bushes, which are, I was on the Native Plant Society, like looking to see, they're one of my favorites. They grow like crazy. And, yeah. And just, I love the way you were talking about, let the step six, let the scrubby, messy, thorny thickets be. Yeah. Leave those brambles, which junipers are definitely thorny, but they make wonderful sanctuary for wild mammals. And just, I love all of this. The signage will be key to educating people how beneficial these spaces are to families of all shapes and stuff. Like, I just love everything about it.
That's the thing we ask people to do, is because one of the main obstacles that I've come up against, sorry, I'm just taking my drink of tea. So one of the main obstacles I come up against is people feeling ashamed of their messiness. If they have a garden that people look in at, they feel they can't make an arc because they're ashamed if it's messy, and they feel this pressure to keep it neat. So what we say to people is, you know, we're not selling anything. You know, we ask people to make homemade signs, make them out of wood or ceramic or metal or whatever recycled material you have lying around, and to write "this is an ark" on it, and then to put the website underneath that to support anyone who is building an ark, basically. So on the website, then, if neighbors are curious as to why it's a total mess in their gardens, which is, you know, the kind of traditional way of looking at something that's gone a bit wild, if they look up the website, it explains why we need an ark, why we need to build arcs, why we're trying to create a patchwork quilt of hope that wraps its way around the world. I mean, there's 40,000, I think there's four, I'm terrible at figures, but there's so many thousands of acres. I think it's 40,000 acres or maybe hectares of lawn in America. You know, that's lawn that's just kept controlled because we have this obsession with neatness and tidiness. But if we gave
them back, dandelions, like, leave the dandelions.
Leave the dandelions, exactly. But if we gave them back to nature, that she would have, you know, the possibility of creating corridors between spaces which are now islandized, you know. So each of our, even like little window box with, you know, a box full of local topsoil, which allows the native weed seeds to emerge and support insects as a shop, one of those motorway stopovers on their flight where they get, you know, some actual proper whole food on their way, you know. I mean, if gardening, the gardening industry really has to change, you know, it's using 20 times more, no, it's 10 times more chemicals per acre than agriculture uses. That's how much chemicals are being poured onto our gardens.
Oh my goodness.
And nobody talks about the damage that gardening is doing. No one talks about the fact that pretty much every plant that you buy, unless they say it's organic, has been treated with so many chemicals that they're staying as persistent and systemic chemicals in the life cycle of the plant, and they're killing the pollinators that come to visit them. And they don't leave those chemicals, they stay, they build up in the plant and they get worse every year. And you know, the fact that we're planting all these non-native plants, which they're selling as wildlife friendly plants. And yes, a lot of the time the big showy flowers are attractive to the pollinators. So apart from the fact that they're often chemically laced, they are also distracting the pollinators' attention from the native weedy plants, which are not as pretty. But without them, we are absolutely screwed, because they can't get pollinated because they're being distracted by the showy flowers, and the pollinators don't visit the native plants anymore. But then when it comes to making baby food for birds, so many mammals and amphibious creatures depend on larvae for their food, and birds need huge amounts of larvae to feed their babies. And you know, moths and butterflies will only lay their eggs on specific native plants because they have developed relationships within the local food web. So larvae will often only eat one or two different types of native tree leaf or shrub or grass or you know, weedy perennial or annual weed. That they're all very important because they're very specific to different caterpillars. Or you know, over there you have the monarch butterfly, I think it's milkweed, they will only lay their eggs on. And they're I mean, there's a wonderful naturalist over there called Doug Tallamy, and he is amazing. And anybody in your part of the world really should get a hold of his books. There's one called Nature's Last Best Hope and Bringing Nature Home. And both of them are just a vast, eye-opening amount of information about how native plants are the foundation stone of any ecosystem. And without them, nothing can work. So our gardens need to become refuges for the native plants first and foremost. And after that, everything else will come back into balance once we do a little bit of support system within that.
Wow. You know, I posted this thing about hope the other day, but you are giving my listeners so much hope and giving me hope. And I interviewed this guy, Dave, oh my goodness, not Salatin, I don't know, Dave down in New Mexico, who said that the monarch butterfly could be the, you know, kind of like the mascot for the environment and for, you know, reversing, saving our planet, because of exactly what you're saying. And just, it's so lovely to hear you come up with these ideas and talk about the importance and the connections and the links and making my listener, like, I remember I interviewed Patty Armbruster. She's been on my show a few times. She talked about, don't buy anything with neonicotinoids in it because those chemicals last. But I just think you're really expanding upon, like, one, how much easier, like your pictures on your website that show these gardens that have come back from nature and landscapes, and just, they're so beautiful. And you talk about how it's from people listening and letting that native, just natural environment thrive that's creating. Just, this is so important, and giving us options and solutions.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is that we don't always need to plant anything, you know? Like
didn't realize that.
Yeah, there's 5,000 weed seeds in every square foot of soil, if in healthy soil. So generally we ask people just to wait and observe initially and see what emerges. Like, stop cutting everything back, see what's trying to come up, because the earth is her intuitive and highly intelligent systems of healing her own skin and supporting all of her creatures. That we hardly know any of it. Like, we hardly know anything about ecology in comparison to what is going on out there. Like the, you know, the kind of the knock-on effect of removing the native plants has had a massive impact on so many levels of an ecosystem. And we keep breaking all these threads in the web of life, and we do not know at what point one of those threads will go and the whole web will collapse. Like, it might well have already happened, you know? So, and we can't wait for politicians to step up, because, you know, nobody goes into politics who's a good person, really. You know, there's if they go in as good people, they don't last. And I see you have some interesting people over there, but, you know, it's not really going to work to wait for them to fix it, because look at the Paris Agreement, for example, that was just full of backslapping politicians who never actually did anything since. Not one thing have they done, not one thing. So we cannot wait for them to do anything. It's just, they're just full of shit, basically. So it's up to us. So each one of us can take the little patch of land we have under our care, and we can fix it. We can restore it. We can give us homes to as much creatures as possible, seen and unseen, rooted and unrooted. And we can create a patchwork quilt. And if everybody takes their own patch of this earth and gives it back to nature, makes it live again, we have a chance. We have a chance to fix this. You know, because if we leave it up to anyone else to do it, they're not going to do it. It's up to every one of us. This is it. Like, this is our hope. And it'll work, you know. We just got to get over the idea of controlling gardens as something for our visual pleasure. It's not. You know, it's valid to grow your own food, because we need to step out of the industrial farming and fishing systems, because they're killing everything on the planet. But we do have to give the other half back. And if you've loads of land and the half that you're working with, that you can offer it to your friends to grow some food there if they don't have any land, you know, or if there's an older person who doesn't have the ability to look after their garden, you could talk to them about perhaps taking half of their garden, making it an arc, taking the other half and growing food and sharing the produce with them and allowing them the joy of seeing all these creatures come into their land is way better than television. And, you know, a lot of company to be had from people coming in and out of their house in a safe environment, you know, growing food, a lot of joy and community in that, you know. So if we take every single patch, bit by bit, we can do this, you know. All it amounts to is sticking up signs everywhere, spreading the word that, you know, the time for gardens is over and it's time to step up now and be a guardian.
What do you say after that? I mean, I just think it's so important, and it's so empowering, because I think we've all felt like, oh, there's nothing we can do and there's no help, and just, we're so frustrated with, like you're saying, the lack of political action. I mean, I want to take Obama's Nobel Peace Prize back. What the heck? He should have been the leader at the Paris Climate Accords, not showing up for like the last day just to sign. Like,
yeah,
I know the frustration, and he's got Congress and blah, 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 whatever. Hello. Like, this is like just so empowering, because it puts it back on us, and like how different it can make if we just dedicate 50% of our garden. And I just feel like as you talk, I'm just imagining, like, one thing that drives me crazy is, so my mom lives in New York on Long Island, and I can't stand all those stupid little yellow signs that say, don't walk here for 24 hours. And like, even if we just took back the lawns and the chemicals on the lawns, but also, like, you've really pointed out to me, like, how much plants and that maybe if just instead of like trying to redo a lot of the areas that I've been like, oh, I need to focus on this area and we should put more perennial, like, maybe even if I just added more water and more of these, like, places for like snakes and different creatures, like little rock rock homes and wood areas, and use it, like, wasn't there something about trees decaying and those places? And I do take, like, there's so many cute, like, to me they're like little fairy homes. Like, I'm an aspiring artist, so like I'm always like, someday I'm gonna, you know, paint all these little fairy pictures. And it's just, it's really, there's so many lovely spots on our property. It's a very dry dry piece of land. Montana is very dry in the summer, but also there's so much natural beauty, and I just think I love that part about 50%. Like, if we could take back 50%, you know, and what you're saying about how many chemicals gardens use, I don't think anybody on my show has said that actually backyard gardeners are using more toxins. That's just appalling.
I know. It is appalling. And it's an attack on nature, which is unprecedented, you know, and it's,
yes,
it has to stop. And the problem is that people think gardening is gentle or green in some way. And it is so not. It is one of the most destructive and silently destructive actions that people are carrying out. And it's this concept of shifting baseline syndrome. I mean, people don't remember anymore what nature looks like, what natural is, you know, because they've been so disconnected from it. I mean, when we were growing up, you'd drive along and there'd be dead bugs all over your windscreen when you got home.
Yes.
This evening. And now you don't see any because they're all gone. They are gone. We've lost 75% of all our insects. And that's a steep spiral within 50 years of, you know, time immemorial, you know. That's what we've done with chemicals. That's, and wiping out woodlands and wiping out habitat and, you know, waiting for the politicians to stop this happening isn't going to work. But we can do it from the ground up. We can do this. Like, we just have to get everybody on board, because, you know, how much land is made up with gardens and landscapes and parks? And, you know, we can also get onto our local, you know, governments, county councils, I don't know what you call them over there, but over here they're willing to take this on board because it's a win-win for them. They put up a sign and they don't have to maintain it anymore because they're seen as being good, doing something good, and we don't care what their reasons for doing it are. We just want them to do it, you know. Sorry, I rant.
No, keep ranting, rant away. This is because it's so true, because I do feel that frustration also with, like, people that are like, they don't realize, like, how big of an impact your local government makes. And I am going to release an interview I just did with this woman, Joan Gregerson, this week, who talks about, she's got like a workbook and a book and about finding your green team. She has a Green Team Academy podcast, I think. And it's all about, like, coming up with a local 90-day project that you're going to put into action. That's very, very similar. And she talks you through the steps to take and how to get it done, and then go with another local project. But she's very focused on local, because local government is what then leads to national change, which then leads, or state change here. That's the way it works. Local will then more likely go to state, which will then go to national. And it's exactly what you're saying. If we do it, then they're going to follow. And we can't wait on these leaders that are, you know, being bought off by the big chemical companies that want, you know. And I do feel like we are making some progress. You know, like, I just, my season 3 episode is with Daniel Mays, the intro episode I just released on the 1st. Who wrote the no-till organic vegetable farm. And he's talking a lot about, and he's taken it, you know, he is not even really tilling with broadfork now after 9 years of adding compost and getting into, like, where he just grows a cover crop and just chops it down. And he's not having to till at all anymore, and doing on a, you know, it's a 2.5-acre farm, but he's feeding like 300 families, lots of families, and just showing how this can work. And, you know, Jean Martin Fortier with the small scale farmers are changing the world. And just, you know, if we can grow our food locally, if people can grow food in their backyard without using chemicals. But also, I love this piece about the natural native returning it to its it makes me also feel good about like some of the messiness that's here on our property. As I look around out my window. And I love the idea of like connecting with like the creature. Like one thing we struggle, and certainly one of the biggest complaints on my show is, what do I do about critters? What do I do? Like we had one year where my husband grew like 22 broccoli plants and they were so beautiful and they were the best broccolis ever. And we would get up in the morning and the squirrels would take one bite, they'd poop on them and go to the next, and one bite, poop. And I was so mad at those squirrels, but now I'm having a little more sympathy for them. And one of my listeners did say they thought maybe it was the dew and they were going for the water. Well, and so maybe what I need is like a little pond or more water places for them. Like I'm just more so inspired to try to make things work with those creatures instead of be like, well, I'm just going to put row cover over my broccoli and I am not letting them anywhere near my broccoli.
Well, the thing that happens is when you create a balanced ecosystem in your arc, you should try and place that all the way around your vegetable garden, because the natural predators will be there to keep everything in balance. Because when you bring balance back, it comes with that type of balance as well. So, there's places for the predators, for the red squirrels to live. You know, like, I don't know your creatures so well. Over here we have pine martens that, you know, will scare away the squirrels. I don't know what you guys would have that would be a natural predator for a squirrel. But if you provide enough food for them outside of the cabbages, you know, if you provide nut trees, native nut trees, and, you know, start to restore kind of what their natural food supply would be and increase the diversity of plants as much as you can on the land. You know, connecting with other archivist friends and doing cuttings and sharing seeds and sharing plants. Because we can't force the gardening industry to change, similar to can't force the politicians to change, but if we start changing, they'll start following us, you know. But the predators and the creatures, they'll all come back, and you need them, you know. That's part of giving them sanctuary, and they're desperate for help. Like, they're desperate for help. So I never feel bad about them eating anything, because we've taken away everything from them. So half of my vegetable garden ends up being eaten by something. I don't mind, you know, because I know I'll be okay, but they're not okay, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know what, like, maybe it's like our, I don't know. We ended up just getting more cats and having more cats in the garden. I don't know. Again, it could have been the drought year, because, like, we grew broccolis last year and we didn't have that problem. It was only that one year, like four years ago, that we had that problem, and then we haven't had it again.
I've just been curious to see if it was tasty. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, what do you have anything? I mean, we've shared a lot. You've been a very eloquent guest. Like, anything else you want to say that we haven't said?
Well, yeah, I mean, I do ask people to put in extra creature supports. So, to put in a wildlife pond if they have the space, and if they don't have much space, to even put in a small bowl of water, to make little lagoons, which are basically, you'd naturally find a mini lagoon in like a rotting hole in an old tree, and be filled with rainwater and rotting leaves. And they're incredibly important, you know, larvae growing spots, nurseries for larvae and bacteria and all the unseen important creatures, which are also part of our arcs. And, you know, piles of wood, you know, dead wood, standing dead wood is an incredibly important food source for so many different creatures, because it's filled with invertebrates of all kinds. So it's always okay to leave a dead tree unless it's really very dangerous, and then obviously take it down and leave it lying on the ground. You know, don't keep cleaning up. Like, leaves are so important. Leaves are nature's winter blanket, you know, and so many creatures pupate in the leaves, and so many mammals need the leaves for warmth, to make homes, and the earth needs the leaves to restore its nutrients, and we keep burning them off with these stupid hot air blowers, which really make no sense. They're just part of the old world, and we really have to build a new one where we actually look after this planet, you know, so that we can have a future. That's about it, really. The most important
part. I was walking my dog down the road one day, and these people were like blowing their leaves off of their driveway with the leaf blower. And if I didn't have a dog, like my dog is really hard to control. Like if I could have walked over to them and been like, I will come rake your leaves. I would have, but I had my dog with me and I couldn't do it right then. But I was like, what are you doing? Like that, it made no sense to me whatsoever. I was like, because it was taking them so long and they were frustrated. I'm like, you're spewing out all this gas out of this machine to like put your leaves in a pile so they're not on your driveway. And the worst part was the leaves had blown right back in. They didn't pick them up, so they all blew right back where they were the next day.
Yeah.
And it was a husband and wife, and I saw them like, when I walked down the road with my dog, the wife was doing it. When I came back, the husband was doing it. And I was just like, oh my goodness. And meanwhile, I'm thinking, gosh, those leaves would be so good for my garden. Because we don't really have deciduous trees on our property at all anyway. I was thinking about those. Like, I should go see. Are they just sitting there? Can I go get them?
Yeah, I know. But the thing is, they don't know any better. They're just doing what they feel has to be done, you know? And nobody is thinking that it'll make any difference, you know, that what does it matter if I do this on my land, or, you know, that's that. People are so disempowered, and the good thing about We Are the Ark is that it empowers people. It gives people hope, because they see how quickly nature recovers, but she can't recover if we don't give her a chance. So it's definitely the way forward.
So be a guardian.
Yeah.
And develop an ark and share 50% of your space with nature. And to be honest with you, you're preaching to the choir. I'll bet a lot of my listeners are like, I do that. But I also feel like you gave us tons of great ideas today and things we can do better and more and help our neighbors, our communities, our own spaces, our own animals, and just thank you so much for sharing with us today, I guess, and being so lovely and being brave and sharing your story with everybody and as doing this global movement.
Yeah, that's just gracious. What else would I be doing, I suppose? Thank you so much.
Enjoy your tea and tell us. So it's weareTheArk.org.
weareTheArk.org. Yeah. And it's a very simple homemade website, you know, probably needs a good bit of updating, but I'm writing the book at the moment. So that'll come out then hopefully by the summertime.
I do have to say it was a little hard. Like it seemed like the top part kept coming down and the bottom part to read, but it's so lovely. It doesn't matter. It's just the pictures are beautiful. The thoughts are inspiring. You've written it really eloquently. It's simple and graceful and just listeners are gonna love it. So thank you so much, Mary. You have a wonderful day.
You too. Thanks, Jackie. Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Hey, listeners. Have you been to growers.co, James Fortier's newest venture? He's got an amazing magazine featuring the inspiring farmers who have followed in his footsteps, taken his classes, put his practices into work that he's highlighting in a great printed magazine. He's got tools that he's designed, that he's developed from looking at tools around the world while he did his book tour that just he uses on his farm. I mean, it's amazing, the information on his website. You can learn about how to use these tools. They're totally affordable. I'm telling you, the Canadian Exchange is great right now. And farmware, that's stylish, it's comfortable, but most of all, it's practical for working in the garden. I know one of my biggest barriers was garden shoes. He's got boots, coats, and you definitely want to get a small-scale Farmers Are Changing the World t-shirt, either for yourself, get one for your favorite CSA or farmer market vendor. It'll make them feel good. It'll make you feel good. and support growers.co. That man has changed our world for the better. He's been so generous with his time, his energy, and deserving of your shopping dollars. So growers.co. Join Patty Armbruster and I for Grow Live on YouTube Live Saturday mornings, coming to you in 2021. We'll be answering your questions. We'll be laughing and sharing information that you want to know, because they're going to be answers to your questions on YouTube Live Saturday mornings, 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Central, 9 a.m. Montana Standard Time, and 8 a.m. Pacific. Send us your questions. You can submit them at the organicgardenerpodcast.com/Patty. You can email me at orgpodcast@gmail.com. You can send them to mikescreengarden@gmail.com. Ask Patty Live. Grow Live with Jackie and Patty. We'll be answering your questions. What do you need to know to grow healthy food in your garden? Do you know someone who would benefit from the Organic Gardener Podcast? If you like what you hear, we'd love it if you'd share the Organic Gardener Podcast with a friend. Thanks again for listening, and remember, grow local.